Welcome to the Sounds of Success, brought to you by the National Association of Professional Martial Artists. This audio magazine is a tool for generating profitable ideas and for taking your business to new levels of excellence and performance. Here you'll find real-life case studies of school owners just like you who have applied our proven successful business and marketing principles to their school and are creating the business of their dreams as a result.
Hi there, this is Stephen Oliver, CEO of National Association of Professional Martial Artists, joining you again today. I'm pleased to have Dave Moss, who's one of our NAPMA Inner Circle members and doing a phenomenal job in Northern Virginia right outside of suburban Washington, D.C. So, Dave, welcome to our call today.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Hey, Dave, let's tell them a little bit about your background. As you and I were discussing, you know, so many schools who don't do well think that other people have an advantage that they don't have, either money or, you know, education or one thing or another. But, you know, tell a little bit about how long you've been training in martial arts and then now how long you've had your own school.
Well, I started martial arts when I was 15. I'm 45 now, so 30 years, I guess.
Long time ago.
And I was in the middle of nowhere, Virginia. You know, didn't have a whole lot of money, didn't have any money, really. I got out of high school, I started taking Shotokan karate,
okay.
And I did that for a couple of years, and then I joined the Coast Guard, and I did a four-year tour of the Coast Guard, where I, you know, studied martial arts off and on throughout my time there, and then when I got out of the Coast Guard, I was here in D.C., well, in Alexandria, and I had just gotten my black belt, and I got out, and I moved out towards Herndon, where Charlie Lee had opened a school, and I went in to take classes, and a week later, he asked me if I would teach class for a week while he went on vacation. I said yes, and you know, 15 years later, I was still teaching there. So. And
you know, it's I didn't mean to interrupt, but it's interesting timing because it's about the time it was right between when Charlie went finished his bachelor's and went to law school that we were talking about him coming out to Denver and working with me, and you know, it was an interesting evolution of a career because, as you well know, you know, he's been very successful as an attorney, you know, extremely successful as an attorney. Running the school never became really what his career path was, but it became what your career path was.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, here's something funny. Is that you had him out for your tournament one year, and he did Exodus, I think, on stage.
Yeah.
And he came back. He's like, Dave, I've got to get you out to see Stephen Oliver because his students are so excited. Everything's so positive. Like, you got to go work. But then he never hired somebody else to teach, so I didn't have time.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah, he and I worked very closely together. But, you know, his I don't know if his first love, but his first, his main career, you know, became the legal profession, and bless him, he's done well with that. But let's wrap forward here. When did you go out on your own and start your own school?
Well, my wife got pregnant with triplets, and so they were born in 2002. So that's when I stopped working at Charlie's and stayed home and took care of my kids for the first year of their life. And then you know, they're one and a half, and I said, I got to get out of the house. I got to do something. And I opened up my school in Ashburn, like the next town over, I guess, from where Charlie was. And we went from a little 3,000 square foot facility to we're in a 9,000 square foot like warehouse type facility We have about 300 kids now. I have 105 of those are after-school kids. We pick up and bring to the school every day and teach them martial arts and do homework with them.
Yeah, let's talk about that. The you know, a lot of the people who are doing transported after-school care have kind of gotten the idea that I'm opposed to it. And as you well know, you know, nothing could be further from the truth. I think what I'm opposed to is anybody doing any business half-assed. And as you know better than anybody, most of the martial arts schools who go buy a van and go start picking the kids up are not running a very good program, and oftentimes end up killing their martial arts school for a sloppy daycare. How did you manage to skip over that risk and do it well, or did you do it poorly before you got to doing it well?
I probably did do it poorly to start with. We kind of moved into the facility that we're in now a lot because of the after school program. It gave us a lot. We took over a gym. It used to be like a fitness gym. And it had a lot of rooms in it that allowed us to, you know, separate that from, you know, our regular classes. So, like you said, we run basically two businesses inside the same space. But
yeah,
you know, but we're able to keep them apart. So, yeah.
Well, what we've seen, and I'm sure you can agree or disagree, but the schools that run a very, very good martial arts school, plus run a very effective transported after school care, whatever you want to call it, are the schools that keep the two separate to a great extent. Obviously, not completely, but to a great extent, staff them separately, and they still run a very good school with very good focus on the school, plus they run the after-school care as a separate business, and mostly avoid that running the staff 24/7 on both things. You and I talked about that in the context of summer camps, about not running a summer camp all summer with your main staff and burning them out. Talk about that a little bit. How do you keep it separate enough that you're not burning people out, and also so that you keep a focus on both programs?
Well, I have a lot of staff.
Yeah.
That's part of it. You know, I try not to keep them there, especially my instructors. I don't keep them there with the kids solid for, you know, 8 hours, because you go crazy. Mm-hmm. We try to break up their time a little bit, too, so they... You know, if somebody comes in early, you know, they only work until, you know, 4 o'clock. Other person works until 9 o'clock, you know.
Yeah.
Our school is busy all day long. We have class starts at 9 o'clock in the morning, you know, on a Monday. So,
we're open 9 to 9. on the after-school program and on that side, what is what are your predominant marketing activities look like? How many you say you've got 105 active, which of course is a huge number relative to what most people are doing. And how have you gone about marketing and developing that?
Well, I'd like to say it was all the stuff we did while we were in Denver this last week, but I got back from Denver and I was too busy to get any of it done.
Right.
You know, a lot of it has been word of mouth, but we try to do, you know, if there's a festival that comes up, if there's a, you know, anything like that, we go do it regardless of, you know, whether we're, you know, have an abundance of students this month or not. You know, you want to like set it up for next month.
Yeah.
And we do a lot of, I try to get really involved with the schools. So we set up a lot of fundraisers for all the PTAs there are 11 schools, 11 elementary schools and 3 middle schools that we service with our after school program. So we try to, you know, we try to go there and do that afternoon class at the elementary school at least once a year. And we donate all that money back to the school PTA. And then we have, like, parents' night outs at the school every month. Looks like this year we're going to have about 2 parents' nights out every month. So those are the ways that we do most of our marketing.
Well, and you have a really big facility. And, again, as you've seen, there's some portion of martial arts schools that have a 2,000-square-foot facility, and they try to cram in 20 or 30 kids in after-school care and then run their normal program, and they end up one direction or the other bastardizing one for the other. How important is it to have a facility that can accommodate both of these programs and keep them separate?
Oh, you have? I don't know how you don't do that, because, you know, those kids have to be, their minds have to be stimulated when they're not in the martial art class, and you know, you can't keep them in the martial arts class. You know, I have 100 of them. I can't keep 100 kids in one class. So we have to, you know, rotate when they go, when they take class even. But yeah, I mean, it would destroy the, you know, the regular program if we didn't keep our after school kids, you know, out of that during, you know, their time.
Yeah. Well, and unfortunately, we both know that a lot of people do exactly that. They destroy their regular program pursuing the next bright, shiny object. And, you know, for a long time, maybe not as much right now as it was, but for a long time, the, you know, running the daycare thing was the bright, shiny object. And so they would abandon what they already knew how to do fairly well for what they had no clue. Talk about that program a little bit more from a standpoint of the non-martial arts stuff you do with them. So I imagine on an after-school care basis, probably have them, what, 2 to 3 hours in the afternoon? Typically from, what, 3 to 5 or so?
Yeah, we have the kids that are, I guess, first grade and up, we have them from, if they're about 3 o'clock, and they have to be picked up by 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
We have a, which, you know, I just walked out of the school and got in my car to call you because it's so loud in our school. We have...
Yeah.
Kindergartners here have half day, so we have about 25 kindergartners there right now that are taking class. So those guys get there at 11. We come in, bring them in. We do a little activity, like a fun game activity with them when they get there, and we'll take them back to one of our rooms, and we have lunch at noon. And then at 1 o'clock, they have a class, like 1 to 1:45. And then after that, they go back into one of our other rooms where we do some type of enrichment program with them, whether that be, you know, reading with the kids, doing homework, math facts, you know, that kind of stuff. And then... some of those guys get picked up at 3 o'clock. Some of them stay until 6. If they stay till 6, we have a million different activities that we alternate through with the kids just to keep them stimulated and not getting in trouble, you know.
Yeah. And so the... one, is there much bleed back and forth between the regular evening martial arts program and the after school or kindergarten, you know, during the day school, or how does that work back and forth?
I'm not sure. Say that one more time.
Well, if you do you get much marketing crossover between the two?
Yeah, we do actually. We parents will come in, and most of our after school students started out as just regular students.
Okay. Okay.
Our kindergarten group, most of those started out in our preschool program, which, you know, we have a 2 to 4 year old preschool program that we do in the morning with them. We have about, we have about 50 of those right now.
Yeah.
But like I said, our kindergarten group, a lot of them came from there. And the ones that didn't come from there came from somebody else who was there. So they, like a word of mouth kind of thing.
Yeah, so you've got a lot of cross word of mouth too. And of course, you talked about the recent boot camp in Golden or in Denver. And I know what happened is you came back from the boot camp and did, 50 enrollments in the week following the boot camp? And again, had nothing to do
exactly.
with, I'd like to say it did, but it didn't have anything to do with the marketing plan from the boot camp. It had to do with what you already had in place. So talk about that. How did you get that many all in one at one time?
You know what? I'm not even sure I know, to be honest with you. I mean, we had thrown out a lot of, we did every little event we could do, and then our phone just started ringing off the hook right after I got back.
So a lot of it was fairs, carnivals, that type thing?
Yeah, lots of it.
Okay.
And a lot of it was the fundraisers we did for all the elementary schools, too. They all have a list at the school of aftercare facilities. So our name's on, at the top of the list. So, we've raised, $4,000 or $5,000 for one of the schools. They're quick to go, oh, this guy's really good. So, I mean, most of those guys came from that avenue. The school recommended them to come to us.
Okay, good. Well, so back to the boot camp. Give everybody your impression of both the boot camp and your ongoing participation with Inner Circle. What have you seen that's been valuable? How has how's the Inner Circle affected your operation?
Maybe come back and look at my school in a whole different light. You see all the things that you're doing wrong now that you guys have perfected a long time ago, and the marketing boot camp. Oh my God, that was worth 10 times what we paid for it. So,
give everybody 2 or 3 ideas that you got from that boot camp that you're going to implement.
I knew you were going to do that.
I know.
The biggest thing I did when I came back from the boot camp is I hired a full-time employee to do nothing but marketing.
Okay.
She's setting up all those carnivals. She's setting us up at the elementary schools now, doing our after school classes and fundraisers. Trying to think of one of the specific things that I got. Put my notes out here. I still have my notes from the boot camp. The best thing though, not just the boot camp, but all of them, has been when I brought my employees with me.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, they kind of understood what I was talking about when I came back.
Yeah.
That's been.
I think that's hard to underestimate the value, because I know, I mean, even going back 20-some years is... I several times finally just kind of gave up and put 25 people one time on a plane and took them somewhere to show them what it was I wanted them to see, rather than come back and try to explain it and get them to implement it. It literally looked like we had chartered the plane a couple times doing things, but you just can't underestimate, can you, the value of getting the staff there.
Yeah. That's been invaluable, I can tell you.
For a school owner that maybe we've beat over the head a little bit about this Peak Performers Inner Circle thing and they're skeptical, what are the two or three places where maybe you were skeptical coming in, and what have you found in the meantime?
Well, you know what? It's bad, but I've known you for a long time, so
yeah.
I know you're on the right track, but we're looking around things, you know, everybody's always, oh, they're just trying to get you to charge more money. Just charge more money. I'm like, no, that's not what's going on. They're trying to get our value up, not, you know. And I think as soon as I went to the first event, you know, that was like crystal clear that, you know, it wasn't, you guys aren't making $1 million a year because you're dwindling everybody out of their money and charging them a fortune for, you know, what they can get at the YMCA. No. You know, it's the leadership program, you know, we got started after working with you guys has been great. You know? Like, the thing I always wanted to do but didn't really know how to do it.
Well, and I would say, you know, some people, I guess, are gun-shy because there were some people who went through the industry and were either teaching them high-pressure sales techniques or that plus just how to suck every penny of cash out of people in the first, you know, a month or so and then not worry about student service. How is this different than that?
Everything that we've talked about has been about increasing, you know, your service, you know, and the value of what you do for your students. Not about, you know, charging more money. And I don't think we've really, I know we've gone over sales, but it's never been pushy sales tactics. It's always been, you know, showing them, you know, what they're going to get, not trying to rush them into a sale or anything else. Yeah.
You bet. And certainly from a financial standpoint, we want every school to maximize the value per student, maximize the revenue per student. But it's always got to be, and you know, I go back 40 years, June Rhee was always preaching to us every meeting, you know, that we've got to give them double, triple, quadruple the amount of value of what they're paying. And if we don't do that, we're not doing the service that we're required to do. So I'll certainly give him credit for instilling that and Jeff Spence instilling that into me, God, probably 40 years ago. But it's so important. Let's go over to the regular program now. You've got what, about 200 kids and families in your regular martial arts program?
Yeah.
And tell everybody a little bit about what you're teaching, what the structure of that looks like, and what some of the breakthroughs you've made in the last year to really keep it growing.
Well, one of the best things we've done was when we actually got the rotating curriculum in place. That's making teaching the classes so much easier for the instructor. It lets them, you know, the kids' techniques is getting better because, you know, they don't have to teach three curriculums at one time or whatever. So,
yeah,
that's been huge. As far as like what we teach American Taekwondo, basically, you know, the same. I'm sure the same thing you teach came from
yeah.
Jun Rhee. You know, I got it from Charlie, who came from Jun Rhee, and.
Yeah, Charlie and I both started training in the Jun Rhee Institute in the same year. Both got our black belt from Jun Rhee within a month of each other.
Oh, wow.
And he was at my black belt test. And then we worked together running a branch of the Jun Rhee Institute while he was, I was a senior at Georgetown. He was a senior in high school because he's correctly about 4 years younger than I am. So it was kind of a motley crew at the time. But the
let's
talk about rotating curriculum, because strangely enough, a lot of our old people in the lineage were the last ones to get this through their head. And I remember when you and I started talking about it, you were I don't know if clueless is the right word, or probably skeptical is a better word. Is so many times we've been doing what we've been doing for so long, we don't see any need to change.
Right.
What was your concern about rotating curriculum when you first heard about it? And then what were some of the breakthroughs you made to really make that leap?
You know what? I guess when we first started talking about Charlie and actually talked about it, you know, when I was working for him, but we never really got into it very much. So, you know, I was teaching everything, so I knew what everybody needed to learn, and it was in some ways a little easier for me then than it is now, because I don't teach all the classes. It's harder to know if you walk into a class to teach, you know, what everybody needs.
Right.
But then, you know, we tried to set it up even before I joined NAPMA, and we just couldn't figure out how to get it started, because every time we do that, you know, you'd have somebody who changed their curriculum next month because they didn't test at the right cycle, and it was finding out how to actually make it work, you know. And, you know, when you told me, oh, start with the highest belt and go backwards, okay, wow, that made it work. Now, you know, we wouldn't change it for anything. It's the best thing ever. But I think, like you said, it's being in that rut of doing what you've always done for 20 years.
Yeah, and I'll tell one on Jeff Smith. It took me, and you know, he's our chief operations officer for the Mile High Karate franchises. Does all
right.
All of the franchise support and training. We run the school, actually it's not terribly far from you, as a national training center. And it took me forever to convince him of, I can go through a list of about five things, but that was one of them. And it was mostly, I think he would say in retrospect, if it's not broken, don't break it. Don't fix it. But once I finally got him to do it, he would never go back. He'll tell you know, I can't believe I did it that way for 40 years. And the basic concept, for those people who don't know, and of course we've done some real pretty good online training. Toby put together a pretty good program recently that's up at the website. But the you know, the basic idea is just to make sure that everybody in the class is learning the same thing at the same time, and get broken of the idea, you know, break yourself of the idea that a form or whatever has to be for green belt or has to be for brown belt, and shift yourself to the thinking of you have blocks of curriculum that are not necessarily one follows the other. And the way I thought about it is kind of the way I went to Georgetown, which is, you know, I had some classes, perhaps maybe a series of math classes where there was prerequisites, and then you can block it into like year one, year two, year three, where you have those things that one thing builds on another. But most of the other stuff, really, whether you learn this form or that form in the ITF forms or whatever, it doesn't make that much difference.
Well,
how would you explain it other than that? I you know, in trying to teach people how to do it if they're not already doing it, it seems like what happens is it takes them 3 or 4 hours of talking about it to get it. And then once they do, it's like a blinding flash of the obvious.
Right. Yeah, you know, I think about it as like everybody walks in, they come in to get a black belt. So, you know, like you said, it's like getting your college degree. But, you know, if you think about it, you know, learn Chun-Ji or you learn Kung-Gun first, second, you know, all those moves are the same. You're just doing them in different sequence. You know, you're going to get your black belt. You're going to know all that stuff anyway. So, you know, you just kind of break it down, and you know, it's easier for everybody if everybody's doing the same thing at the same time. You know, they all help each other out. So
Well, yeah, and far from watering down anything you're doing, it actually makes everybody much, much, much better, doesn't it?
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, when you have to teach three forms in one class, that waters down everything because they only get you for a third of the time during the class. Whereas if you're teaching the same thing, then everybody gets you 100% of the time for the whole class. So, yeah, it's so much better.
You know, the best description I heard from it, and I don't know how this really came to be developed in the industry, to tell you the truth. I know in my case, back in the late 80s, I did it for our black belt curriculum, trying to solve a different problem. We were developing a lot of black belts, but a fairly small number at each level at any one time, and had, you know, a couple hundred actively training black belts, but they were spread out over about 20 different levels of ranks. And I put in a rotating curriculum and went from first to third degree black belt in order to solve that problem. But the best description I've heard was Bill Clark, who I think about the same time had developed it as something he was doing with all of his under black belts. He didn't do it with his black belts. And he described it as he was teaching college programs. And in a college program, everybody would start at the beginning of the year, and so you would have them all moving together for the year, and then the next year you'd have year two people starting together. And he was always trying to solve, how do I get the martial arts school to run as easily as the college program? And that's the way he developed it on the underbelt level. And I remember we were at a meeting, an EFC board meeting, and Dave Kovar, and I think completely independent of either one of the other two, got up and started describing this bright idea he had about rotating curriculum and walked through, got about halfway through the first sentence and said, well, yes, here's the way we've been doing it. And by the way, here's how Bill Clark is doing it. And, you know, sometimes these things just kind of, you know, gestate independently, and probably somebody I don't even know, put it together the first time in our industry. But if you're not doing it, you're really missing the boat. And that's true whether you're doing MMA or whether you're doing Taekwondo or anything in between.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can't imagine doing any style without doing it now. It's so much better.
Yeah, and sometimes at the opposite end of the spectrum are cardio programs or MMA programs where they really don't have a curriculum. And you've got to have a formal curriculum and formalized progress levels and formalized achievement levels, or else you have a huge dropout rate. So the way you fix the dropout rate is having a formalized curriculum combined with every other month or every 90-day formal progress checks. But then you want to make sure you make it in a rotating sequence, not in a sequential process.
Right.
Dave, from a standpoint of student retention, and I know you have very good student service, very good student retention, relative to, you know, 98% of the schools out there. What are some quick pieces of advice you could tell everybody for one? I mean, the last thing you want to do is have 300 students and need 300 new ones every month to stay even. What are some of the things that you need to make sure that you're keeping them and really doing a good job of graduating them on to black belt and beyond?
Well, the first thing I tell my instructors all the time is that if you want to keep them, you got to educate them. Because if you're just entertaining them, they're only going to be entertained for a little while, and then you're going to be boring and they're going to go on. So, you know, they got to get it and feel and know that they're getting it first. Secondly, my thing is, you know, you got to get involved with them. You got to, you know, if they didn't come to class, give them a call. What, you know, what's wrong? Is everybody okay? And then you got to walk out and talk to the parents about how their kid's doing. And you just got to be really involved with the student, you know. That's the way I do it.
Yeah. Well, and I think the universal is the number one way it's proven, whether it's in sales or in service, the number one way to get people to like you is to sincerely like them. And
They got to know you love them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
And if you don't love them, you're in the wrong business.
That's exactly right. And that's why high-pressure sales and just suck as much cash out of them as possible never works long-term. It can work short-term, but it never works long-term.
Right. Yeah.
The other thing, and I know that you're very good at it, is just finding a ton of ways to, one, know as much about each individual student as possible, but also to let them know that you're both interested and knowledgeable about them. Talk about that a little bit. How do you get your staff to do that as well?
That's hard. we have a regular staff meeting where we talk about all the kids. And, I want to know, why has Johnny not been in class for a week? Or, so-and-so got hurt, so they haven't been in a while. Okay, we call them or, I go through all the students with the staff, and we try to. They have to answer to me.
Well, and don't downplay that. It's so important. Is Steve Covey talked about the difference between efficiency and effectiveness, and with maintaining a high level of involvement with the student body. And especially doing it through staff, there's no quick way to do it, is there? You've got to sit down, go through the pictures of all the new students so we get all the names memorized. Every day have everybody talking and find out what conversations were held that we should all know about. Go through the ID cards of anybody who's missed a class and find out. Is there something we should know? Were they going on vacation? Has Billy been ill? Was there something going on? And everything from, the parents are separated to grandma's in town to there's some, undiagnosed illness going on are things that everybody should know and be aware of, right? And it's, again, the risk of, as martial arts school owners behave like the guy running the fitness center, all that they do is end up with huge attrition. And, we're both focused on, we're enrolling them because we want them to be part of the family for forever, right?
Exactly. That's how I tell my instructors I want my school to be, the family. When we have testing, in graduation, the end of that is all of us having a big potluck dinner together, so we can, socialize and talk, casually and, get to know each other.
You bet.
There's been a few times where the schedule gets so crazy that you just don't have time to do that, and I hate it because it's always... feel like you're just bringing them in and sending them back out. And I'm just like, no, I don't want to rush this. So.
Well, that's just so important. And as we both know, it's that you're creating social events to get to know people, but you're doing on an educator professional level. And the more you get in all of these levels, the parents engaged with you, with what you're trying to accomplish for their child, the more you're going to be just flying along with the thing. We're gonna run out of time here in a second, Dave. So, but let's give them a couple of nuggets. If you were going to, again, having come back from the boot camp and coming up on a year now, I guess, in Inner Circle, if there's two or three things that somebody who really wanted to start growing their school. Focused on marketing to begin with, and let's say that we don't have much of a budget to spend money. Where would you start? How would you immediately start getting the volume of students up?
Well, for me, I would call all the local elementary school principals, or you have the PTA president or the fundraising person, and call them up and say, let's schedule a parents' night out. And they will bring me, you know, they'll send home flyers to every child in the school, and they come out to your school, and then it's up to you to win them over from that point. But we do that nonstop, and there's the budget on that is zero.
Yeah. I mean, that's a wonderful way. Then, of course, the part of the key is making sure you capture their name and phone number and mailing address
right.
when they come in.
Yes.
So you can then follow up forever.
From
a standpoint of just two or three quick ideas on dramatically improving retention, what are two or three ways, especially with your staff, to just get them much more engaged?
That's a tough one. That's hard.
Well, I'll tell you the first thing that you do without even recognizing is you model the sincerity and the concern.
Right.
Because no matter how much you tell the staff member they've got to be concerned about the students, if you're not, then they follow your lead.
Yeah.
And even if you have to go kind of massively out of your way to make it obvious to the staff member, because sometimes they don't see it even if you really feel it. You've
right.
got to start with that modeling behavior.
Yeah. Well, you know what, that's one of the things I've done in the school is I don't talk to parents about money.
Yeah.
I don't do it at all. And I don't, my head instructor, they don't do it either. My program director, that's his job to do that. And when they want to talk about money, I'll bring them over. You know, he talks to them about other things too, not just, you know. But, you know, I don't want them to think when I'm talking about, you know, Johnny needing to work on this, that, or the other, that what I'm trying to do is sell them, you know, because really what I'm trying to do is make a difference in that child's life. And that's why I do martial arts. You know, that's why 99% of my student body are kids between, you know, 2 and 10.
Well, you know, it's really good advice, and you obviously have to balance that in a situation like I was in for close to 25 years, is with multiple schools, is I was always the martial arts figurehead and wasn't the one that was talking to them about missed payments or tuition or any of that kind of stuff.
Right.
And I always liked having a billing company, and I'm not advocating that, but I always liked to have a billing company so somebody was a bad guy when it came to collecting the payments. And usually kept the instructor and the program director separate, although there are a couple ways of looking at that. But clearly you're dead in the water if they think the only reason you came up to talk to them about progress is because there's a test fee that needs to be paid, or there's the renewal that needs to be done, or their payment is 2 weeks delinquent and you're only talking to them about service to try to, you know, pull out the next few dollars out of their pocket. And frankly, I had that experience when I was young. It wasn't with Junior Institute. I trained with a different school for a while. And my sense at the time was that the only thing they really cared about was collecting the payment, not about me being in class. And you've got to be eternally and incredibly vigilant on that.
Yeah.
But hey, we've monopolized enough of your time. I'm sure they found it extremely valuable. I guess the one last thing I would ask is, again, for people who are thinking about maybe wanting to be in there with you and the other heavy hitters, what's one thing you could tell them about thinking about and evaluating the value of peak performers or if they qualify the Inner Circle team?
Oh, my God. I mean, if they're even if they want to make their school run and make money and make a difference, really going to the first event that I went to, oh my God, that light bulb came on. It was amazing. I mean, I think somebody described it as like drinking out of a fire hose, but it was just like constant good ideas. I can't imagine not having it. So.
Well, and a lot of it is not adding 52 to-do items on your plate. You know, and correct me if you think differently about it. But I think especially the personal coaching is about, let's so focus on the two or three things we should be doing right now, and let's think about the 20 things that seem like a good idea that we could worry about later.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're running a school now and you haven't gone out of business, you know, in the last 12 months, you're probably doing something kind of right, but so they, you know, there's hope for them at least. But you guys have so much good information. Oh my God! I mean, I have doubled. You know, we're making about, we made what, almost 400,000 a couple years ago. No, I'm sorry, 300,000 a couple years. Last year, I finished the year at 400. We're going to finish this year at probably 600,000 or 700,000. So it's just going, constantly going up. So
really,
great.
from the time you came into the program, it looks like you're going to be up about $400,000.
Yeah, probably.
Is that about right? What, you know, that,
yeah.
You can't beat that deal. That's a,
no.
A pretty deep,
like
pretty deep,
almost
pretty deep return on investment. Yeah. Well, fantastic. Well, Dave, hey, we have super appreciated your time. I'm sure that what we'll want to do is follow up and explore.
Sure.
One of the things I'd really like to explore, perhaps more in depth in the near term, is with you and Paul both, really how to maximize doing this after-school program and or decide not to do it, because, again, I just hate to see people do it half-assed. And the second thing is we're really focused on, a couple of the interviews you probably listened to with Keith After and Buzz Durkin, and I thought were fabulous, too, of really the high level of sincerity and making people part of the family, keeping them for life. Because if you don't have that, I mean, that is just foundational, wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So
yeah, I've listened to that. Who's the guy? Buzz, I think is the guy.
Buzz Durkin. Yeah.
Yeah, I've listened to that like 5 times because he's exactly what I want to be. Like I love the way he talks about his students and the family, and exactly how I want my school to feel when you come inside. So.
It's so important. Well, thank you very much, sir, and we've appreciated it. And I will be I'm going to be seeing you next week out in Anaheim.
Yeah,
so I look forward
to it.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Bye bye.